Good afternoon, everyone. It's the Agriculture Show here on CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. It's episode number 35, and today we're going to talk a little bit about junior farmers and some other topics. It's your host, Jeff Steger, and with me today is Barclay Knapp, and we'll introduce him a bit later, but let's start on with some music, and we'll be back very shortly. Stay tuned in, folks.
Gotta feed him every day. If you got a good bull cow, better feed him every day. Cause may come along some young cow and tow your bull away. Grab your bulls in a pasture. Oh, why there ain't no grass. Babe, your bulls in a pasture. Oh, why there ain't no grass. But you women all say that you love me. Look like every minute gonna be my last. Oh, bird, don't mean your bull no good. Oh, bird, don't mean your bull no good. Why don't you rub your bull car and pet him? Tell him what you want your bull to do. Babe, your bull got a home, mama. It long as you're right on. Babe, your bull got a home, mama. As long as you're right on. Lord, if you play with my horn, baby, make you break up your happy home. Babe, you may be beautiful. You gotta die someday. Mommy, you may be beautiful. You gotta die someday. So you must to give me some of your loving before you pass away. I got 4 feet to walk on till I shake every saw night long. I got 4 feet to walk on till I shake every saw night long. Lord, if they break on me, baby, you find your bull car gone.
This is Mark Reeser. You are listening to CKMS Radio, 100.3 Sound FM. The Agricultural Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture. The Federation represents the primary producers in the region of Waterloo. Our goal is to promote the farm community in support of innovation, hard work, and compassion that is emblematic of the region of Waterloo. The WFA strives to bring together the policy needs of the farmer with the needs of society.
Mobilizing the youth of today, educating them in a better way, training so they won't go astray. Hear what me say, yeah. Keep your head to clearer thinking, loyal heart, got to be persevering. Do the Lord a service, make your hands willing, your health for better living.
4-H,
for community and country.
4-H,
respond to food security.
4-H,
I gotta make the best better. Let us get together.
4-H.
Hello, folks, and welcome to our show today. And boy, what a sunny, beautiful day today. Boy, the snow all went away pretty quick with the last heat spell, and hope you all had a good time outside in that weekend. And I just want to mention before I start that I hope you enjoyed a little 20 seconds of 4-H promo. We're going to have them back on our show sometime. That's a cute little jingle that comes from, I believe, 4-H in Jamaica. So it's lots of fun, and we'll do some more with those guys, hopefully, soon. And so that brings us to today's show, and I just want to welcome again Barclay Knapp. Good to see you, Barclay.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Yeah, get that thing all figured out there. That's better. So we're delighted to have Barclay with us for the last few shows, and it certainly makes the studio more full, and we can certainly talk about some interesting stuff, junior farmers and other general farm type things. So today is episode 35, and it is today January the 15th, I see. So we're going to talk a little bit about maybe some junior farmer stuff. I know since our last, you were on here last time, Barclay, there's been election meetings and so on and so forth, so it looks like the junior farmers are off to another good year.
Things are picking up, and the winter usually slows down, and that's when you do a lot of more or less the meeting and planning for the upcoming year.
Well, that's good to know. And so what are they doing now? They're getting ready for is it singing swing coming up? It's
Winter Games. It's provincial competition that gets rotated around the province, and this year Renfrew County Junior Farmers is hosting it out in Pembroke. Mm-hmm. So all the clubs and counties are heading out there to compete in different gym sports such as basketball, dodgeball, volleyball. I think there's floor hockey. Usually there's bowling. Last couple handful of winters or so, you can't really depend on having outdoor events, so those kind of don't get planned as much anymore. I almost forgot curling. There's always curling.
Did you mention on an ice rink? It's dodgeball. No, it's with the brooms. And you just whack the ball.
Oh, broomball.
Broomball. That's still going.
It's still going in some parts. Yep. A lot of how to actually play it and actually the equipment has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
I know, especially in Perth, Huron, there used to be, in Bruce County, used to be a lot of leagues just for junior farmer clubs to compete against one another.
Yeah. So, no, it's good. I know it's funny. Like, certain parts of the province, they really go for certain types of sports and that like. And I guess it's all, whatever happens to be popular at the time with the people that grew up at the time. Like, if you all had parents who curled, you'd probably want to have a curling junior farmer club.
Oh, absolutely. Parents influence you in ways you never thought you would have.
So we're kicking on the idea with 4-H. I had an email from John Drummond. Hello, John. And we're going to try to do a little bit more with those guys, too. There's another important part of the rural fabric. We can certainly talk about cows and corn till our eyes fall out, but we can also talk about the social environment and the community of interest and those sorts of things and what more fun I think anyone can identify with to hang out with your peer group have the same topics you want to discuss and from that launching pad into learning all kinds of other neat things.
Community is a really big word in rural Ontario. That's how a lot of these rural communities come together. You have socializing, you have basically the joining of an effort in hand, putting together events such as a fall fair or a plowing match. Since everyone's spread out and there is less density in population and in number of people in a lot of communities for rural Ontario, community is a very big word.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is that how you get to see your neighbors sometime, but it's also how you get something done together. Many hands make light work.
Mm-hmm. And then I know even just recently, and I know the junior farmers were involved, was with the international plowing match last year and held in the Waterloo region down in the township of North Dumfries. And it was many things, but I still remember one of the organizers as we worked out setting up that site, that he said, remarked that, how do you put a value on this? But here we are, I've worked with people I haven't seen for years who I used to work with, met new friends. And there's the community has that energy level now, which says, you know what, we did that. We worked together and created something. So that kind of the community type thing you really want to see, whether you stay in the community or whether you move to another one. But those are great leadership and important things, I think.
Yeah, well, I even talked to some people. This was the first time, volunteering on a large scale at the plowing match.
Yeah.
back in September, and they had no clue what was to go in the planning and how big it was, and actually how many people all came, and they were quite surprised. And I think when you do something like that in a team effort, you learn a lot about yourself. You learn a lot about what, you know, you can do as a team, as do in within a community.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, Junior Farmers, you guys were out there, like, two or three days straight, I think, or were supposed to be. I know it got a little bit mixed up, I think.
But I think they were there every day except for the last day to help take care of the livestock in the education tent.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Watering area. Them, mm-hmm. you know, giving them fresh straw for bedding, you know, giving them some hay. In general, just making sure that they were, you know, they were stress-free and they were well-fed.
Yeah, I think it was called the Roseville Corral, just over where the school buses came in, I think. Yeah, not too, can't remember. There was a lot of different signs and things going on. It was pretty busy just to keep going with it all. So
very busy area.
So I think what we'll do is we'll play a song here, and we'll talk to some more to Barclay. And welcome you to stay on board here, folks, whether you're listening to us on 100.3 on the FM dial in the KW area, whether you're listening to us on the World Wide Web at www.soundfm.ca or on the Rogers box. And I believe the call number is 946. So welcome aboard, folks. We'll be right back. It's the Agriculture Show here on January the 15th, episode number 35.
Celie Diebold, the Waterloo North Dumfries Queen of the Furrow for this year 2011-2012. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
Well, we're back, and I'm just talking with Barclay here, and he's found on his internet the Mendel. And Mendel was an early biologist, and he crossbred peas. What did you find out there, Barclay?
Well, it's mostly what he did was studied posthumously after, you know, he passed away. But just growing in his church's garden, just he noticed, you know, different peas that he would breed with and how he would crossbreed them, different traits. And those different traits would pass from one to the other depending on whether they were dominant or recessive. And just the topic, you know, just the conversation we had just, you know, while the song was on, was just regards to, you know, genetics and the use of genetics and the importance of using genetics and understanding them in agriculture. Yeah. And that's something that we as humans have been doing since we started domesticating animals and plants, is we've been trying to get a better plant that'll yield more fruit and get a better sheep that'll grow better wool.
And so that's one of the it's interesting, I was relating to you before in the song break that there's some great topics in agriculture that would never see the light of day, except that in the recent controversy, in this case particularly about GMO crops, topics that would never see the light of day are coming to the fore. And there's a perfect example, what you just mentioned, Barclay. In fact, where does plant breeding fit into the scheme of things when it comes to people? And certainly GMO is an example of plant breeding, a newest and latest kind. But as you correctly point out, we've been doing this since Mendel. What was his first name? I want to say Howie Mendel. That's not very. That would be very fair to him.
Gregor Johann Mendel.
Gregor Johann Mendel. So, we want to pass on to you, the listener, is that, you know, we've been tinkering with nature for a long time, and now, I mean, this is kind of an obscure point. So, as I mentioned, obviously, genetically modified foods, that is a groundbreaking science, and they can do things at a level that was never even imagined before. They can evolve a plant. So, but the fact is, you know, you take something like, the weed resistance you can breed into a plant. Although it's true that we're doing this very quickly in rocket science, like stuff you never dreamed about. But even Mendel could have done that if he had enough time and effort, enough people. He could have naturally bred a herbicide-resistant plant. Does that make sense?
Well, we've changed plants so much in just our own breeding with it. Almonds, for instance, almonds naturally are poisonous.
Right.
And it
I got a story there. Go ahead, sorry.
It just happens to be, you know, you'll have the odd mutant ones that are edible. And, you know, we're able to breed through those and breed out the poison. They're, you know, something that I believe the Spanish conquistadors came across in the Florida area. Peas naturally, when they're the pods are ready, they open up and they kind of explode out the little pea seeds.
Mm-hmm.
Corn was originally a tropical grass. Now you have, you know, the seeds of it are now come in, you know, something almost the size of some people's forearms,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's the cob and it's, you know, the husk as well. You have a lot of flowers, crossbreeding, a lot of flowers, that are able to have different colors that are be variegated. I believe that's the term, you know, having the stripes of the white and the green through them.
So should people be concerned that we do this with plant breeding, that we change them so radically from their parent species?
Well, there's always concern. It's concern, a lot of concerns if you don't have all the answers, if you don't, you know, exactly know how it's done. Like you said, you know, if Gregor Mendel had time, you know, how his crossbreeding and understanding it, he could have, with a lot more people, bred a better crop. And he could have bred, you know, maybe a pea that grew in less time. I don't know if you're familiar with a fellow over in Guelph who did some breeding with soybeans to make them grow, be able to have a shorter season and grow north of London.
Mm-hmm. Don't let me forget the potato story, but go ahead.
But no, Peter Hannum was just a dairy farmer's son just outside of Guelph, and he had a chance to go to the University of Guelph through a scholarship and study agriculture there, and he saw a plant growing in one of the University of Guelph's flower beds, and he asked the professor, what's this plant? And the professor said, that's soybeans. Don't worry about it. It'll never grow this far north.
Mm-hmm.
So he tinkered with that. He learned about it, and he started planting that in, you know, amongst his dad's crops he grew for the dairy cattle, and he started growing it and started taking plants that, you know, would have a shorter season, become riper sooner, and started planting them. And he started getting so well and so interested in it and sent enough seed that he was able to ship a whole lot down to Chile, where they have opposite summer winter to us, and have a second crop there in the year. So he was able to speed things up.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to constantly be breeding for a shorter season crop. And eventually, soybeans has become one of our biggest crops in Ontario.
Mm-hmm. I know, because for the longest time in Ontario, all we could use, we had to use American gene stock. And so they have a longer season down there. And as their breeding program unfolded, they eventually attempted to grow soybeans in Minnesota and Wisconsin, which are climates roughly similar to ours. And that's really all they had to choose from in the beginning for Ontario soybeans, what Mr. Hannum did and the others, was to take existing stocks and try to make them even better. So, but yeah, it's pretty, for the longest time, only in Chatham, Windsor, in those areas you could grow beans, and those were just beans that were end of the row, end of the line for the big American breeders. So, but, you know, the public shouldn't worry about, you know, the whole point of this is to produce food, to produce the things that people need. And so plant breeding is a normal activity. I'm surprised yet how, I just want to get my head wrapped around the people's concern with genetically modified techniques. And, you know, we've always introduced new species in the world by our plant breeding efforts to date. Why is this one more of a threat than... Is it just something new? Is it?
It's something probably at one time was considered probably science fiction. You're taking right. a gene or a trait from one plant, say drought tolerance, and you're putting it into a common domesticated plant.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something. In some cases, you probably couldn't crossbreed in because the two plants, the domestic plant and that say wild plant in the Sahara. You know, they would never be able compatible with one another for their genetics.
They would never get to meet.
No. Well, exactly. Yeah. But here you have the chance to take, you know, one little DNA trait and add it in into, you know, a series of all the other DNA traits to a domesticated plant. And that plant, you know, if we have a summer like we had last summer where, you know, there was a lot of heat and not a lot of rain, then you would have a domestic plant that can handle going out with without a lot of rain, a lot of heat, so drought tolerance,
mm-hmm.
and that would really help keep the yield up for a lot of farmers, and that would have a lot of interest. Instead of just considering your crop lost, your crop would just, you know, be still in survival mode, and your crop would, you know, wouldn't be as profitable and as much, you know, bushels come the, you know, the fall when you're harvesting or the end of the summer when you're harvesting, but it would still be there. It mm-hmm. wouldn't be a lost crop.
Yeah.
And that would be something that a lot of farmers would be interested in, and a lot of people that would be interested in too for food production and for eating.
So as you point out, the reason why people are afraid of it is because it's something new. As you said, it's like something we only dreamt about before. But still, we can do it, so I think the industry has probably missed the boat. They haven't kept people up to date on what we're doing, the science and so on, and it's come as a huge surprise to people. What's going on out there? What's happening? And that's only because up until just a few years ago, people didn't really worry about it. And all of a sudden, they say, wow, this has been going on for 20 years. How come I didn't know about that? And that's probably the agriculture industry's failure is not to keep people abreast of what's happening out there.
Well, it's also how do you compare it to what's happening with your family? How do you be able to understand it with your own schema, your own palette of understanding?
Mm.
Right now, we're similar things are being studied in science for humans, such as, take a step back and, you know, a little further, all whole organs being transplanted.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily the same, you know, genetic trait being added in, but you have a whole, you know, amount of flesh and information, biological information, being put into one person for their health and safety and their well-being and prolong their life and, you know, hopefully limit suffering. Bone marrow transplants. That's not a full organ, but that's, you know, a piece of, you know, the inside of a bone.
Mm-hmm.
And bone marrow is something we all need and we can't live without.
So we already do a lot of outrageous things that were never just the realm of science long time ago, and somehow those things, because of publicity, people have grown to accept them. I'm sure there's somebody out there who's still protesting bone marrow transplants. Mm-hmm. That's just wrong, right? You would think. But because of education and so on, a lot of people think, well, okay, boy, that's weird, but if it works, I'm for it.
Oh, a lot of it's, you know, just education and just, you know, having the conversation. If, like you said, you know, it's new, some people don't know, but you keep it in the closet, people are going to get skeptical. Why is it in the closet? How come, you know, I don't know about it? You know, should I be worried? You know, and a lot of it, you know, the research, the money is going towards the research and development and not necessarily the marketing.
Now, I want to point out to the listeners, and I'm sure you agree, Barclay, that, you know, all these scientific things, yes, they do need constant monitoring. Is it working? Is it effective? Are there side effects? And I think the debate is not about that because, as we all know, all sciences and all new technologies, there's a downside. There's inevitably with everything. There's pros and cons, and you give up something to get something else. So, folks, I don't think we're trying to say that, you know, genetically modified food is absolutely safe 100% of the time till the end of time. And, of course, that's a claim that no technology can say. Like, you saw the other day where apparently cell phone manufacturers, if you look carefully at the operator's manual, you got your cell phone, it specifically says, do not hold device to head. You must keep a distance because there is a chance that those microwaves are melting something in you. So we presumably then we want that thing. In the case like we want food, we want cell phones, and we accept that there's risk there and it should not come to a surprise. Is that?
Well, just going, you just reminded me of a little YouTube video I remember seeing a couple months ago. I think it was from China, on a kitchen table. About four phones were kind of put in a circle around some popping corn.
Oh, yeah.
Those four cell phones were phoned. And while they're receiving, you know, their signal, their cell phone signal, the corn started popping.
Oh, yeah. I think that's just a hoax.
It looked pretty real to me.
Well, I know, but you know how they do it. I mean, I think it's a hoax because those cell phones are, what, 3 or 4 watts or something. There's no way you don't have enough energy to microwave, but it's a cool story.
Yeah.
It's a cool story if you want to make people not, you know, be mindful of their cell phones, how they use them for sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to keep up with all the stuff on YouTube, on the internet. Like, there's so many hoaxes out there, but they certainly are fun for just to think about, wow, could that really happen type thing. Yeah. What we could do, actually play a song here pretty soon, but before I forget, I was going to, we talked about vegetable crops and, so I have a story I'll get to later after the next song about potatoes, and we'll be back with that. And for right now, it's the Agriculture Show. It's at the halfway through the hour here, and we'll be back with the rest of the show. See you in a bit, folks.
I just remembered.
As you, and I look good on the barbecue. Yogurt, curd, cream cheese, and butter's made from liquid from my udders. I am cow, hear me moo. I am cow, eating grass. Methane gas comes out my ass and out my muzzle when I belch. Oh, the odor.
outcome of my dinner. I am cow, I am cow, I've got gas.
Hi, this is Angie Koch. You are listening to CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM.
So, folks, we're back to our show here. We're halfway through. That was the I Am Cow by Arrogant Worms. And our first song today was Bull Cow Blues by Big Bill Brosny. So hope you enjoy those selections. So we're back a little bit talking about, around the table here, about... we started out talking a little bit about, with Barclay Knapp, about Mendel and how he bred plants and how we're still doing that nowadays and with the latest science and so on. And we'll carry on that conversation. But what I wanted to do, too, was just before I forget, relay a story about, I'm going to say this is in the perception of what's going on in with the plant breeding. And this is anecdotal, unfortunately, but it sort of makes sense. So apparently when I was back at the university, there was this here prof out at the now discontinued Cambridge Research Farm, and he was working on potatoes. And as you all know, if you're a gardener, potatoes, they're a great crop, but you have to, it's a full-time battle just keeping the bugs off them, potato beetle. It's just the bane of anybody with a garden, that they come in and decimate your crop. Just to backtrack a bit... So potatoes are part of that family called nightshades, which is like tomatoes and so on. And the point there is that they have high levels of alkaloids in them. Now, relative to other plants. Now, alkaloids, they're poisonous, but depends how much. So most plants are bred that we eat, potatoes like, are at a level of alkaloids, which is safe for the most people to eat, but not strong enough to kill bugs. So the story goes that the professor decided, well, I'm going to keep breeding plants, and he bred a plant that the potato beetle wouldn't eat. He was very proud of this production. And so he went, took some home that night to cook them up, and he made a big pot full of mashed potatoes of these, and they tasted good. I mean, the texture, he had bred them for the texture, was the cookability, those are important things when it comes to vegetables as well. Life was good, and he went to bed. But by morning, he was in the emergency department of the hospital because he had bred a plant with such high alkaloids that it actually poisoned him as well. So there's conventional plant breeding, and he was breeding a plant that would resist bugs, a very desirable thing, but it was too much. So, you know, what's the message there, Barclay? I'm suggest that it's never that a plant or any product has toxins in which you do, it's how much the toxins are they at a level which will cause people to be sick.
Well, with every action there is a reaction. I think that's kind of the moral of your story there.
Well, it is, and it's also that the perception, like, that was that okay breeding to breed that kind of thing?
Well, at least you know what you can do with your breeding, and you know that yes. Wasn't going to get out to the general public anyways. But, you know, part of research is to find out what you can or can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do something, what kind of cause and effects does it have?
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge is only gained through trial and error, and we have to get off the couch in order to gain knowledge.
And just want to reassure people in our own little way here that there's many different perceptions to what happens in agriculture nowadays in regards to plant breeding and making new varieties. Sure, sometimes it doesn't work out, but testing and so on, and I think most people are doing the best they can. I kind of think, too, I had this discussion with someone the other night there that because the world is organized corporately and with patents and so on and so forth, that I think most people would say, oh, boy, these big corporations have strange behaviors. And so, I don't get it. Like, they're so protected, they're making all this money, whatever you want, whatever attributes you want. And since we're talking about plant breeding, the principal corporations that are doing this new plant breeding, arguably they do exhibit corporate behavior, which is debatable amongst anybody. You just go to Tim Hortons coffee shop or at any other people get together. They're somewhat like, wow, what are those big companies doing? Are they taking over things? But don't let those kind of corporate behaviors get away from, in the case of the genetically modified industry in regards to food products, don't let that get wound up too much with the science of genetically modified of that latest type of plant breeding. You kind of get what I'm getting at here, that you know you don't want to mix together. Just because someone wears, you know, polka dot pants doesn't mean they're not a genius. Pretty simplistic thing there. So hopefully that's kind of frames things a little bit for our listeners. We know our listeners are mostly going to be our urban neighbors here in the Kitchener-Waterloo area, and we just want to, and this is a show put on by a local farm producer group, and we know there's lots and lots of stuff in between worth discussing, but we'll just wave our little flag here that certainly I don't think all doom and gloom when it comes to modern agriculture. So what else did you find on your internet there, Barclay? You found Mendel, Johann Mendel?
Well, I was just looking up regards to seedless grapes,
oh, yes.
Seedless watermelons, seedless...
How do they do that?
Well, it's a little more complicated. It's a lot more science involved than I think really, you know, I could digest and then kind of put into common terms here on the show today. There's a lot more involved in actually manipulating the plants and their breeding so that they're actually not setting seed, and that seeds, more or less, they're preparing their offspring to continue on their line of genetics and their species. But no, we've been manipulating plants in different ways for centuries, and this is just another one of the way. And can you imagine eating bananas with seeds in them? I've never seen a seed in a banana.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I've either, but I always thought that those, there are small structures in the center of the banana that have a, they remind me of, it's like strawberry seeds, but on the inside of the plant. They're just really small and stuck on the inside. Maybe those are the residual seed buds. I don't know. But I don't know. Really?
Well,
the other way around. Do you have a picture of a banana with, a true banana with seeds on it that we could look at?
It'll take me a while to look it up here on Google.
But just to ask you a question. I think I see that vestigial seeds in bananas if I buy them. Just what was supposed to be the seeds, and somehow they've been bred or dampened so that they just only have the basic structures in place.
Well, I'll show you, and it look almost like okra.
Okay. Oh, look at that, eh? So those
brown seeds with white fruit flesh.
So they're on the surface of the husk. There are they?
Well, they look the same all about.
Yeah. Huh. Look at that, eh? Thanks for finding that. It's nice to have you can search around and find those kind of things on the internet. It helps our story quite relevant here.
Well, it's just that science has been so involved in food, you know. More or less so than just, you know, the farmer itself, or they probably, Middle Ages and in ancient societies, they probably had a person, you know, that was their job in the village.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they would be called, but, you know, propagation of food and making sure there was enough food, you know, that was important for everyone's survival.
Mm-hmm. So, you don't know. Were you going to go hit any of the farm shows that are on now in the wintertime when usually the farm population goes to learn the latest and greatest techniques in farming? I know the Southwest Ag Conference first of the season has come and gone already, the first weekend in January. There's Guelph will have a growers meeting, and so will the a little bit at the farm show in Toronto at the airport. I haven't looked lately, but I suspect there's, as usual, there it will be a speaker, and this person will talk about, well, what's on the horizon when it comes to varieties and so on. And I think we'll probably see. I know I've heard offhand. Well, I know that in the soybeans, for instance, they have been able to produce a soybean that's omega 3 oil mostly, but having trouble trying to find a someone who will process that crop because it's typically has to be large quantities in a large plant. And so there's the point is there are already designer crops out there for the consumer and trying to just get through the marketing channels. This is omega-3, and there was also one, right, I know what it was. It was a better cooking oil. I think it was called Vistiv was the trade name. And so these beans, soybeans were crushed. Just to backtrack, folks, you're cooking your french fries at home. You're cooking that in vegetable oil. Vegetable oil comes from soybeans and some other, but soybeans mostly. So wouldn't it be nice if the soybeans that the farmer grew also had the antioxidant and non-charring and the desirable characteristics for deep frying? And so these types of products are out there already, and gosh, some of the things, some of people's dreams, you know, you could have a plant that would be bred so they would have lots of, you know, to relieve diabetes with insulin in the plant somehow, and you could go to the store and buy special just off the top of my head, you know, special tomatoes, and these are would be one way for someone who's diabetic to get their insulin. And that's quite an amazing thought, eh? Rather than needles
that,
and pumps.
That sounds like science fiction, but I'm sure it's not off, far off.
Like you will see it in our lifetime, like you for sure, because I'm old like Fred Flintstone, and you're young like Olympics or something. So, well, you look back how much change there has been. I can see in plant breeding stuff that only the dreaming will happen. That's good news. Even with conventional breeding, there's been improvements. I always get a big kick each year. I get the seed growers catalog. Now, this is with all the newest varieties for this year, 2013, what you can grow in your garden. Now, this is for the commercial producer. And it typically has, you know, the latest varieties, colors, shapes, hardiness, winter, short season type characteristics. And, you know, I don't garden, but I think I get as much kick out of looking at the seed catalog as a home gardener does looking at the plants they can get. Because as a grower of corn and soybeans, I get it to grow things. But I thought, well, wouldn't it be fun to grow these things? These are really crazy fun looking foodstuffs, and to think there'll be more and more of that over time, it's great. You do it, yeah. You grow some stuff. Tell us what you're growing. You're growing some herbs, right?
Mostly herbs, yes. Yeah, okay. Mostly herbs. That's a market that I feel that's underutilized, and I love to eat, and I love, you know, flavoring for the food, and I just found it interesting just reading about these plants that are all these different properties. I'm also working on learning about growing world crops, such as okra. I grew some yard-long beans this past year, and some daikon radish, and grew some Japanese cucumbers till the beetles killed them all and ate it all.
See, now we need some genetically modified plant that'll resist those darn things.
Well, right now, just a lot of it's my learning.
Yeah, okay.
It was very successful in growing, you know, something such as Japanese eggplant. It just the time for the fruit to bear and to mature so much shorter than our hybrids that we grow in our gardens right now in Ontario and the northeastern U.S. because
mm-hmm.
We're all in the same kind of seasonal zone. It's just a lot of it's learning. There's a big market here for feeding our ethnic populations.
So just for curiosity, how big was your garden this year compared to last year and compared to next year? And will it be the same variety of products, or have you found ones you like? Tell us how your effort has evolved from when your first impression, for your first plantings and interest, to where you are now and where you want to be.
Well, originally going back to, you know, when I was probably knee-high to a toadstool, I was involved with the family's garden, just picking weeds and, you know, pulling lettuce for lunch or for a salad for dinner. And it got to be, you know, when I went back to school for engineering, I needed, you know, something to get me outside away from, you know, all the computer study and the book study. And I just started working in a field that, you know, kind of had some area in it that was too small and too hilly and too rocky to get a tractor and a plow around, and started planting in there and just experimenting with different things and what I, you know, can grow in that soil in that area. And just happens to be, you know, herbs do really well in a lot of different climates and a lot of different soil types, as long as the ground's drained. I've gotten more and more towards herbs. Every year I try to grow a few more herbs. This past year I added in marshmallow, which is actually a herb. It's not actually the white sugary thing you buy in the store. It's traditionally a root that's stewed or cooked and roasted, southern Mediterranean cultures. Mm. Something like that I'll add in this year, probably add in yarrow and a few other medicinal herbs, just to see, you know, how they grow and how they do in this region of Ontario.
Yeah.
Just to
so
see.
You're still exploring the options rather than picking one yet. How big of a plot is this in? Boy, each crop.
I'm probably got a quarter of an acre I'm working right now, and little by little, just the way it is and how many stones there is in this these two couple of hills, I have to work it by hand. So it's probably, you know, 100 square meters I try to, you know, take in every year and work on that and build up the soil and put in organic matter and, you know,
it's a lot of work.
Take the weeds out.
You want to be picking something soon, I would think. I don't know. I'm sure it's fun just to do it by itself, but I'm hearing that part of the plan is to actually maybe be commercial with it.
Well, that's the hope. I bought acquired a large number of perennial plants last year just to put them in and have them see how they're going to handle over winter. Mm-hmm. And the hope is to go a little bigger this year and, you know, start actually selling them now that I have more knowledge of, you know, how to harvest them, when to harvest them, you know, what their nutritional needs are. Some of them are actually, you know, modified through breeding, such as lemon thyme, variegated lemon thyme, and actually all yellow tips around it. And I believe there's a university somewhere on the East Coast in the U.S., I want to say Boston, but I don't think I'm right, that has bred a lot of thyme and bred a lot of oregano and mint.
Mm-hmm.
You have mint now that can taste like orange, that can taste like pineapple, and that's just humans and scientists and research is actually breeding those flavors into those plants.
So, but you're trying to find what works for here in this climate, and some of those may not because they're not adapted to this climate, I would think, right?
Well, you have one of the better herbs that's from the Americas. Most herbs are from around India and the Mediterranean. One of the better herbs we have is lemon verbena, which is central Southern American herb. Great lemon flavor. Unfortunately, around here, zone 3, zone 4, it's not very winter hardy.
Yeah, so would that be one you've abandoned? It's interesting, but not now?
I'm trying to see if, you know, this, my experiment over the winter was seeing, you know, if I put enough leaves and straw around it to see if that would keep it from being affected too much by the winter cold.
And then the dilemma, of course, is then you trap things underneath that layer too. Yeah. So you got to see how successful it was, if in fact you can protect enough from the cold, but still not encourage the growth of insects or diseases that would be to kill that plant.
Rosemary is a very popular plant, whether it's restaurants or homes. You see a lot of it put with potatoes. Very good with pork, very good with beef. Unfortunately, it is not winter hardy. It is an evergreen, but, you know, anything, you know, +1, +2 affects it, and it will suffer and die.
Mm-hmm.
you know, it's a plant that you can, you know, dig up and hopefully not disturb the roots and pot it and bring it inside. But it has its requirements too, that, you know, sunshine and light and all that it needs as well. And it's just trying to find, you know, how can you do things in a garden, a natural setting, and, you know, be able to show your customers that, you know, we do things that you can come and see and walk around in. And, you know, local food is big. And then, you know, also, you know, make it survive. Some plants just can't. Some plants, unfortunately, in this part of Ontario are annuals.
So this is a great topic, and I think a lot of us can identify with it, the colors, the flavors, and shapes. Marketing is always the biggest hassle. It's, at the end of the day, it's growing your stuff is probably the easiest part, is how do you market the stuff? What would you see if you can if you'll continue to pursue this market garden? I've already kind of pigeonholed it, but where do you want to go with this? What's reasonable? A great hobby, maybe breaks even. Living, I know anything's possible, but where do you see it going?
Well, you definitely have to know where your customers are. Right now, you know, I'm being from the Guelph, Cambridge area. What I grow, not necessarily is, you know, what those people in that area need or are interested in. My specialty I've just started with, or one of my specialties, is hot peppers. At the market I sell at in Aberfoyle, south of Guelph, hot peppers is a little too spicy for those customers.
So the good news here is you have a market stall now where you're selling some of this stuff. Okay.
Now, I've been around to different markets in the area, and it depends where you are. You know, I found in Burlington there's a market there. There's multiple market vendors that are selling hot peppers.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a large market there. It just depends, you know, knowing where your customers are is the important part. And then actually finding them and letting them know that you're there.
Well, that's a good point. It's certainly, marketing is the big thing. Right now, my mind is filled with that other way that we market as producers to the customer, and that is, so it's community shared agriculture, and that's in my mind that's elegant. That's probably the way it should be, because what the heck, you work, you produce your fruits and vegetables, you're at the market, and the customers aren't there, you're stuck. And the community shared agriculture is where those persons who believe in what you're doing give you money to start a season to grow the stuff, and they take your stuff. Is that something you want to do, or are you content with taking, you're okay with potluck, I guess you call it?
Well, community shared agriculture is a great idea for those that want fresh vegetables and fresh berries, but not necessarily don't have the time or the room for it. And they can actually sometimes they can go to the market and pick it up. Or I know Candace Wormbecker, just outside in Waterloo and Baden, she sometimes brings it to the Uptown Waterloo Market, you know, for her customers. Some of them will come to her garden and they will pick it up there. And as long as it's fresh, you're getting fresh food. You can see where it's coming from. You can talk to the grower. Mm-hmm. It's something I have looked into. I've seen the market, you know, what I wanted to do with herbs, and I see that there is growth. It's just trying to do something that hasn't been really done before.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest hurdle that I have.
Well, the sponsor of this show, the Wiley Federation for Agriculture, we really support that kind of stuff. But our main criteria is, you know, what can you make a living at? Mm-hmm. And how do you, like, A, do you want to make a living at it? Maybe, maybe not. But if you were going to try to make a living at what you're doing, investigating all these different new varieties and whether they acclimatize them, well, how would you do that? Like, how would you make a living at it? Do you think it's going to continue to be, hit about four or five different markets, try to pick which one? Is it a community shared agriculture model? Is it a model where you try to get into a restaurant chain or something, or all three? Or, like, how do you get spread too thin and still do it? What's kind of coming out of your experience so far as marketing? I know you're having fun doing it, but where do you think marketing's going eventually?
Well, it really depends on that person, depends on the word of mouth as well. That is the best source of marketing, dollar for dollar, you can possibly get. If you have customers that are happy about you, they'll let other people know, the friends know, and next thing you know, you have people contacting you. You definitely, in this day and age, have to have a website, and that's something I am, you know, picking away at, doing one on my own. You definitely have to have a way to connect with the consumer. I know even conventional farming. There is some groups, Farm and Food Care is one of them, where they want to engage the consumer. You know, if there's stereotypes, if there's curiosity, you know, they're there to be contacted. And basically, it's whatever you can handle. I was told a story, I think it was by a barber in Stratford not too long ago, where their brother and sister-in-law had, you know, had a market on the side, and they supplied restaurants. And they got so popular and such a demand that they had to give it up because it was either, you know, putting that full-time or quitting their jobs or still trying to do both and hire some people.
Yeah.
And it was just a weekend project, you know, that they were doing to help supply restaurants. So it was a good problem to have for them. Unfortunately, you know, they decided that the agriculture side of their life was just too much of a hassle.
Yeah, and that's kind of what getting at is that, and, you know, there's other guys that in a Federation for Agriculture, and you've met Mark as well, and he's having fun in his garden.
To each their own, everyone finds their own niche. You know, some people, they like selling directly. They like that personal experience. Some people want to avoid that.
We want it to be viable as well. Mm-hmm. I get it. It's fun. You like meeting people and so on. But as you point out with that friends of yours, is that after a while, it's just not worth it. It's just too much. What can we do that it's like dog eat dog and people just give it a whirl till you blow your brains out or something?
Well, with any business, you know, the first little while you're going to lose. You're going to lose money, but you have to be able to see that there is an end in sight, and you have to know also if there is no end in sight or if it's not coming that way, when to cut your losses. We got to remember that farming is a business. We can't produce food for free because everyone has to eat. Everyone has to have a roof over their heads. And in this country, everyone pretty much has to have, you know, some form of transportation to get around. We're so spread out. So you have to look at it as a business.
Well, that's good news. And, you know, we'll talk a bit more about that in our outro. We're getting to the last part of our show here. We could certainly go on for some more time if we wanted, but we're already after the hour. And we'll play a song or two, and we'll be back to Barkley and the agriculture show. We're going to play one here by the Tremaines called Buzz, Buzz, Buzz. See you shortly.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Will you be my honey?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
I'm your little bee.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Why do bees like roses?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
It's so plain to see.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
You're sweeter than the roses. You're my honey. You're the one for me. Now the cows in the field go moo, moo, moo. And the wise old owl says woo. Like a dove in a tree, I'll bill and coo, and I'll keep right after you.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Will you be my honey?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
I'm your little bee.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
Will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
It's so plain to see.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
You're sweeter than the roses. You're my honey. You're the one for me. Cows in the field go moo, moo, moo. And the wise old owl says woo. Like a dove in a tree, I'll bill and coo. And I'll keep right after you.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
How will you be my honey?
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
I'm your little bee.
Buzz, buzz, buzz.
How will you be my honey? I'll buzz, buzz, buzz till you belong to me.
I'm Barb McAllister from the Ontario Plowman's Association. You are listening to the Agriculture Show on CKMS Radio 100.3 Sound FM. The Agriculture Show is brought to you by the Waterloo Federation of Agriculture.
Well, we're back, folks, in the last bit of our show. It's episode 35, the Agriculture Show. Your host, Jeff Steger, and my guest today is Barclay Knapp. And we've covered a lot of different topics, and we're just going to wrap up our show here with a few last items. I don't know if there's anything we want to remember that we haven't already mentioned, but just delighted to see you've been online in that song break. You talked about farm shows coming up and how getting educated on what's new and what's not and so on. And you were surprised to see something at the Farm Smart conference at Guelph and made some comments about the machinery show in Toronto in February, I believe. Just looked over your shoulder briefly there. Looks like a full slate at the Farm Smart Conference. Anything jump out at you that would be of interest to not only to farmers, but of course to our urban listeners, that if they were so inclined?
Well, one thing that does stand out, and I love these conferences where they bring in guest speakers from out of the country. Mm-hmm. Really have a culture shock and a difference of agriculture brought to you, and they have one of the ones called Comparing Dairy Farming in Canada versus U.S. and Europe.
Okay.
And that's Russ Kavanaugh from Penner Dairy, it looks like, it's coming to talk about that. So I know how we do things, you know, in Canada, because we're under supply management for dairy, is a lot different from the U.S., where it's basically a free-for-all and hope you can sell it, and in Europe, where I believe they're getting out of supply management.
Yeah, it's about done, I think, now. I think they still got some quotas, but not much value. And Australia and New Zealand have been out for some time now.
I just know I've seen a lot of pictures of all the, not necessarily rioting, but picketing and protesting regards to that by the dairy farmers in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Well, in all the G7, G8 countries, all agricultures are supported. It's just how you do it. So here we do it with supply management. But all those other jurisdictions support their dairy farmers just as much, but different methods. So here, you know, the old saw is supply management, the consumer pays, which is arguably right or wrong. But in all those other jurisdictions, the states in Europe, the tax base pays. Those farmers are paid to produce milk. Depends how you set it up, you know, who's paying for what.
It's coming out of the same pocket. It's just, you know, what's more sustainable in the long run.
Well, what looks better is when the consumer doesn't have to put as much money down at the till, but the support that industry is taken out of their taxes. Whereas with supply management, it's not taken out of your taxes. It comes right out of your paycheck at the time. Either way you pay.
Well, supply management, you know, can also be looked at as controlling the price as well, you know, at the cash register.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it's not an up and down price, you know, what to kind of expect every week. And it's not going to be, you know, a price that, you know, you feel guilty of paying, or a price that, you know, is totally outrageous and three times what it was the week before. The constant supply is, mm-hmm. well, it's actually constant.
Yeah, so that's a whole other thing about. It'd be a great show sometime. Just what does agriculture? What's the implications of agriculture marketing to the consumer? The way all things are marketed has a lot to say about what consumers pay for it. You know, if you're buying a generic drug, the patents are off. You're buying it for what, a quarter of the price of the patented product because of how it's marketed. And so you could have the same thing with agricultural stuff, is that what you pay at the, how did the price get, how was that price determined at the grocery store? And see, which money was inserted and which one was taken out. I'm not going to tackle that one. It's way beyond my expertise, but I get the general drift of it there. So what else did you see there at the overseas dairy farming across the world there? He's a foreign speaker. Anything else that jumps out at you?
There's different topics here about nitrogen and corn, secrets of getting 150 bushels per acre of wheat, and recapping of the weather and how to keep phosphorus in the soil and out of the lake. Just keeping fertilizer such as that from running off into waterways, because it can get picked up in heavy rains and washed out.
Mm-hmm.
That's something you never want to do, because then it gets expensive to fertilizing and having a good crop.
Apparently there's getting to be a worldwide phosphorus shortage, I read in a paper. Those easily accessible mines are becoming depleted, so there's a nutrient that's going to sometimes be in short supply. In fact, we may want to have plants that are more efficient and so on with phosphorus. And livestock, too. It's just getting back to some genetically modified stuff. The University of Guelph developed a pig, and it's called an EnviroPig. And what is an EnviroPig? Do you know this story, don't you?
I've read about it, yes.
Yeah. So the gist of it was that you have to feed pigs phosphorus, and actually quite a bit, because their digestive system doesn't assimilate phosphorus. So you have to put in 10 pounds to get them to soak up one. Wrong numbers, but you get the idea. You have to put more phosphorus in than you need for nutrition, because the pig's gut only absorbs so much phosphorus that it needs for growth. And you mentioned about the pollution and phosphorus. There used to be huge algae blooms in the Great Lakes from phosphorus, whether it was fertilizer, you name it, or laundry detergent was the culprit for the longest time. So here comes along a little EnviroPiggy, oink, 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 and he's able to digest phosphorus with a greater efficiency, and hence lower demand for phosphorus, lower chances of pollution. Sounds wonderful. But, oh my goodness, Eric got caught up in the whole GMO debate, because this piggy was modified, mm-hmm. so he would digest phosphorus better than any other pig. So there's great science. I mean, that's a win-win, but the politics, the optics looked so bad. Just the pits. It's don't want to take much time, but it's funny how conversations lead along, but I can remember a large potato producer out east. And then I think we all know that company out there. And so they grew a lot of potatoes there in Prince Edward Island. And as we talked about potatoes before, it takes a lot of spray. So the island waterways are becoming filled with organophosphates, very potent killers, and in fact toxic to humans, because we're that much closer to being an insect than we are a plant, for instance. So the organophosphates are very bad. So those growers were presented with a chance to have a GMO-modified potato with a very common trait that's now in corn that would not make it necessary to spray with potato killer. The world was wonderful, except the large processor from the East Coast says, well, we're not going to support this because our customers don't like it. So they went back to the tried-and-true method of putting on organophosphates by the ton to control potato beetle. So the consumer, that hasn't worked out well, so that means the consumer still is getting safe but residual levels of organophosphates, when if they could have gone the GMO approach, there would not be those types of products on the plants. And so it's really hard to get the ship of state turned around to embrace the science rather than something else. That's a long story. Are you impressed, frankly?
It goes back to the beginning of the show where we were saying education and bringing things in the light for everyone to talk about and for everyone to learn about.
How do you get that comfort level down, or how do you get people used to it? But you got to be fair to people. Obviously, you and I, we probably have certain things that we'd rather have do traditionally, yet you know, there's new ways of doing things.
It's also how you use conversation as well. You can't be using acronyms. You can't be using big scientific words or terms.
That's very true.
You lose people in those.
Yep.
Farmers, we can get bad in talking in our own industry language, the same as, you know, say, truckers or astronauts. Mm-hmm. You know, every industry has its own language. It's how do you find a different language to be able to communicate with someone who doesn't have a full background, doesn't have a full understanding, which is totally understandable. You can't be an expert at everything.
True.
But how do you reach out to them in a way that they can listen to it easily and understand?
See, now that's exactly what we're trying to do with the agriculture show. One of the main things we're trying to do is that we want to demystify agriculture. We want people to come on the show who can explain those things to our listeners. On the assumption the listener is a resident of the Kitchener-Waterloo area, educated, working hard, and wants to know about agriculture. And that sums up in a nutshell. Well said, Barclay. We have to have the communicators. So if you as a listener have a topic you'd like to hear more about, I'll try to find someone who can speak to it. Certainly don't want to hear me talk about it all the time, although I certainly can. But I'm glad to have people like Barclay show up and we talk a little bit about agriculture. And I suppose we should probably think about anything else we want to talk about, Barclay. We should probably wrap up here. We've had a whole hour at people's ears for now. I'm sure they're ready for something else. We'll be back next week and try to find another topic. You'll be with us for a few more weeks, I hope.
Well, Farm Smarts this weekend, this Saturday at the University of Guelph.
Yeah.
Anyone wanting to find out a whole lot of stuff about agriculture, you can find out more about it through www.uoguelph.ca/farmsmart.
Mm-hmm.
You can also find it on the Ontario Soil and Crop Improvement Association's website.
If you Googled Farm Smart, it ought to come up, right?
And
I would think.
And also, you have, beginning of next month, you have the Guelph Organic Conference, mm-hmm. also at the University of Guelph.
Okay.
Just taking over the classrooms on the weekend.
Sounds
and, so. That also always has a variety of speakers, and I see one of the speakers has actually been on the show, Angie.
Angie Koch's been on the show, and actually had a little promo from her a little not too long ago, and so I think she's getting all geared up for another season. She's a great spokesman for the industry. I think she's had some experience in other media outlets as well as our show. Anytime they get her back on again, it'd be great. She's the example I was thinking of about community shared agriculture, and that's the model she's taken, mm-hmm. and I think she's done really well with that. I can see where that's got a lot of legs that can help, that can make a living for a farmer and their family.
It's all dealing directly with the customer, knowing your customer,
mm-hmm.
and getting your product to the customer on time.
Yep. So that's our show for today, folks. Thanks for listening in. We'll see you next week. Hopefully Barclay can come back, and I've got some other guests lined up and just trying to get them able to come out at the same time that I'm coming out. And so we have a whole winter and a year to go for this, and we're looking for ideas, and hopefully you're enjoying our show. Enjoy the rest of the week. No snow, a little cool. What's the forecast this week, Barclay? I think it's just to stay a bit cool, and I have not heard of any big major snowstorm coming.
No, last night I think I was watching CBC and they said it's going to be cold but dry.
Cold but dry. Sounds like martinis or something.
Martinis are more wet than cold. So.
Okay. bad joke. We got to cut. Thanks a lot, folks. Thanks for tuning in to the Agriculture Show. It's your host, Jeff Stigger, and it's CKMS Radio 100.3, and we'll see you next week. Bye for now.